is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. MGO Blog Roundtable. Folks, you know what we base this segment on. MGOBlog.com. Brian Cook is the father of that site.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
He has like shirts and things. And you have a bobblehead yet?
That's a great idea.
Oh, no. Bobblehead yet?
No, nobody's approached me with that commercial opportunity.
That's awesome.
That's coming, isn't it?
The only thing better than the shirt with Brian Cook trying to kiss you.
I think bobbleheads are a little bit, I mean, there's some intensive work that needs to go on with the modeling and kind of paint it right. It's a lot.
But can you imagine your hair flopping around when it bobbles?
Well, they don't.
That'd be kind of cool.
We have a Chase Winovich bobblehead in the studio.
I know, but it could be better. So that's what I'm saying.
I mean, you know that the bobbleheads don't have real hair, right?
But there could be.
I mean,
in principle,
it seems like if they were going to do that, they would do it for Chase Winovich.
Right. He has a point. There's no Craig Ross this week.
I didn't do it.
You didn't.
I don't know what I.
I might,
doing
I might have done it.
Doing lawyer things.
He might be mad at me.
He's not writing another book.
Well, he's done, and he's edited now.
He's always writing a book.
We don't have to do this part when he's not here.
Do we know what the title of the book is?
No.
We don't? Does he know what the title of the
Michigan
book is?
Michigan football before 1900?
It's something like, you know, when dinosaurs roamed the earth. Why are we doing? He's not even here.
I mean,
there
are people that tune in for Craig Ross.
I'm not saying they don't tune in for Craig Ross, but like... We don't have to do the Craig Ross is bad.
We give him a nod at the beginning of the show, and then we move on.
We have to take this opportunity to promote him because he doesn't do it himself. So when he's not here...
You know, I think he's made it clear his feelings on whether he'd like to be promoted or not.
Ed Fang likes to promote the Power Rank, right? How are you doing today?
I do. I'm great. How are you?
Doing all right. Tell us about the Power Rank.
Power Rank is a site dedicated to better football predictions through data and analytics. Been working on it for, like a decade now. And I still try to get better every year. You can get all my stuff at thepowerrank.com.
All right, so Michigan falls to Penn State 28-21. Let's just start with your broad brush takeaways from that contest, Mr. Cook.
I mean, there's too many mistakes for the whole team. People dumping on Ronnie Bell are like, okay. But we had how many false starts? We had how many offsides penalties? We had how many kind of throws into coverage? We had
drops.
So just kind of, you know, you get the impression that, you know, every year there's this weird road game where your team doesn't perform very well, and you just kind of chalk it up. Well, it's a road game. And this was the best game of the year from a performance perspective, and it's still that game. So it's like...
Yeah,
that's not great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're fighting the crowd. You're fighting a good team in Penn State. You're fighting the refs, and you just can't
do
that.
You're fighting the refs?
No, I'm agreeing with them.
Okay.
It's just like,
you're surprised you were agreeing.
No,
with them.
It's just like you brought it up, but I'm like, some of those calls.
Yeah. You know, and like brutal. You know, they could have done it, but with the drops and the mistakes, that you just can't spot them 21-0 and have a reasonable chance to come back. And you know, it was a remarkable performance that they did come back. You know, watching it again last night, you know, Harbaugh killed two drives in Penn State territory by not going for it on fourth down.
Three?
Was it?
Well, one was like at the 48, Michigan 48. So they
there was a fourth and one and a fourth and three.
And then they took the field goal attempt.
You're not talking about the one they went for and got jobbed on the Tariq Black mugging, right?
That's not. No, he went for that.
Okay.
He should have gotten a pass interference. I mean, live I didn't see it as pass interference, but the replay was clearly...
Mm-hmm.
He got there early. You know, I mean, that's what you're fighting against. But there was two other times that I thought I would like to have seen them gone for it. You know, you get anything on those two drives, it's perhaps a different game.
Yeah, the second one is fourth and three. It's around midfield.
And that's when your offense was rolling a little bit, too, right?
Well, you're down two touchdowns, and there's 5 minutes left in the third quarter. They only get three more possessions the whole game. I mean, you got to go for that one. So, like, From the coaches on down, it just kind of felt like a performance where it's like you could see some things coming together, but too many mistakes, especially for a game this deep into the season.
How did you feel about Shea's performance in the game?
I mean, he was better. He's up and down. Like, they're, you know, they start calling these quarterback runs with no read in the third quarter, and you go back, you know, like the tape, and you're like, they are frustrated with him because there's another two or three opportunities for him to keep the ball and get big chunks of yardage, and he just doesn't do it. Much better pocket presence than he has had, all but inaccuracy. Like, there are a couple of throws on the first drive that hit the turf, and that's on him. There's a throw in front of Collins.
Man, I guess I'm higher on his performance in that game than you. I agree with you on the mistakes. You're right. You nailed it. And his share of mistakes, too, but I just felt like
he's better. Yeah. He's better, but Michigan scored 21 points. Like, it's not like he went out and lit it up. Like,
I agree with that, too. I mean, it was 43% success rate on passing plays, which I think is remarkable given the drops.
I mean, there were.
And that reflects on Patterson.
So we should talk about the first drop type substance from Peoples-Jones, right? So Michigan, there's nobody in between the hashes for Penn State, and Peoples-Jones is running a crossing route. And, you know, they do the thing where they show you the downfield, and the ex-quarterback who's doing color commentary is like, nobody's open. And there's somebody open by 5 yards, like in the middle of the screen. And so Patterson doesn't see that. Patterson rolls out. Patterson throws a lofted ball to Peoples-Jones. Peoples-Jones catches it. As he's securing it, the safety punches the ball out.
Right.
So is that on Peoples-Jones or is that on Patterson?
I put it more on a receiver.
But like if he...
Well, and the defender made a good play.
But if Patterson...
The defender made a good play, but if I'm putting it on someone, I'm putting it more on a receiver.
But if Patterson comes off a guy who's got four guys around him in black and comes to the wide open guy on a three receiver route in the middle of field, that guy has no chance to punch the ball out.
Could he have been better delivering the ball in a more timely fashion?
But sure. When we talk about drops, we're talking about stuff that...
You're talking about the drop on the bubble.
Right.
Well, that was pretty much the only one, and then the Bell one. Those are the only two drops, and that bubble wasn't going to go anywhere.
But Nico Collins should have caught the one over the middle.
No, that one was way outside the frame of his body and low. Like,
I think he got two hands on it. No?
Okay, yeah, but Bell got his fingertips to, like, balls early in the year. People were, like, blaming him, and I'm like, no. Like, if it's way outside the frame of your body and you get your hands to it, but it hits the outside of your hands, it's not a catchable.
Yeah, I will. See, now that one I will put on the quarterback, but I'm not going to put the Donovan one on him.
But so I'm not saying that that's entirely his fault. I'm just not saying it's entirely Peoples-Jones' fault. It's just, you know, it's a little bit of both. Like, it doesn't, like, I'm not saying that Patterson was bad in this game, but I'm also, people are like too high on this performance. Like, I think it was okay. And I think that's better than I expected, but that's what it was. It was okay.
I think it was better than okay. I guess we'll agree to disagree on that one. Ed, what did you think of his performance in that game?
I mean, I was encouraged. I think coming into last week, you know, sitting here looking at Notre Dame at home, I don't know if we could have beat them. I think after what we saw, I was like, yeah, we can probably beat Notre Dame if they, I mean, especially if they play like they did in the second half.
I mean, the other thing you got to do is you got to bake in those bubble screens into his stats.
I thought you were going to be like, bubble screens! I thought you were going to be doing cartwheels about that. They bubbled the crap.
And did it work?
It would have worked better.
And did it open up the run game in the second half? Yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
Why did it take seven games to do this?
Well, I mean, they've tried it before.
No, they have not. They have not. I mean, they threw like two bubble screens all year. They didn't go after it. And they did in this game, and it worked. And like, they can't do that six games in a row because people will download it. But now that they're reacting to the bubble screen, you get double moves off that. And you always got to stick and move the offense. And what really bothered me earlier in this year is that teams are begging to get a bubble screen on their face. Like, they're playing 10 yards off. They're nowhere near any of the receivers. And Michigan won't do it. And now they've done it. People have to react to it. And now you can use that.
And you can really see, to your point, in this case, you can really see the impact it had on the run. There was one in there on their last drive that might have been a touchdown. If he gives it to the running back, he looks to the bubble. If he gives that, man, it is bumping your head on the goalpost. if he gives that the type of reaction that you saw to the bubble on that play. So, you know, we'll see. Was that an opponent specific deal, or is that something that we're going to because of their blitz package, or is this something that we're going to see from them consistently moving forward? I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, I hope we'll see it coming forward, because I think it makes Shea's life a lot easier if he can just break off 8 yards on a screen. You know, he makes a quick decision, he gets it out, and instead of getting stuff, you know, behind the line of scrimmage for 3 yards, like, you get some positive yards. Like, that makes everything easier.
Yeah.
As you guys have already talked about. And then maybe some deep shots off of that, you know, when people are expecting that. I think it makes everything easier.
Yeah, it's – if the yards are – if they're giving him to, it's like a Clay Davis. I'll take any MF'er's yards if they're giving them to me.
I like the reference.
Just don't say his trademark line, please. I don't think anybody.
Yeah, well, you got to watch The Wire to get it. But anyway, I guess I was most encouraged by a couple of things. I felt like Shea's his feel in the pocket was the best we've seen it be. This year, the times he was able to maneuver and make a play, whether that's throwing the football or scrambling for some yardage, he was able to move the team effectively. But still, too many, to your point, and we haven't even gotten to officiating yet.
Are we going to go there?
Still, we are. How all can right. you not in this game? Still too many mistakes, and the last drop wasn't the only drop. You had costly penalties. You talk about bubble screens. How about just regular screens?
I mean, they haven't had one work all year.
That's kind of my point. And that is, you know, that's something that they're drilling, that they're working on. You feel like in this last part of the season, they got to hit a few of those.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the interception, and you had your play side guard miss a block. You had your tight end on that. The tight end misses his block, and that guy intercepts the ball.
I thought that was more Charbonnet tripping, because that's probably incomplete if Charbonnet doesn't trip.
Okay, but
was my
yes. It's instead of an interception, it's a guy getting blasted immediately
right.
on the throw, like. It wasn't going to work.
Right. Right. Okay. So fine. Yeah. It wasn't going for 20 yards.
Right.
Admitted, but
he wasn't going to get picked off if he stays up. But still,
I mean,
they got to get better at that.
I don't know. The rhythm on that was just
rhythm on all their screens has been kind of off.
Yeah, and like by this time the screen got out, I didn't see how the OL was supposed to get where they needed to go. It didn't seem like they had repped it sufficiently. And that kind of comes back to a lot of the problems that it kind of seems for the whole team, right? Like, it's just sloppy. And the Hamler touchdown where they go, where they get their final points, where they go tempo and you got Josh Metellus playing outside leverage with no deep safety. It's like,
yeah,
come on.
I mean, they acknowledge that they didn't get the call in.
I mean, but what?
I mean, I'm not offering that up as an excuse. It's to your point that was a mistake.
Yeah, and how many times is Michigan going to get tempoed without having like a come to Jesus moment where it's like, all right, we need to get better at this? Because this happened all last year. It's happening this year as well. If we played like chaos team Kevin Wilson Indiana, I don't even know what that looks like. I don't want to know. And it's a frustrating thing because this is year 5 and they've had this issue and they're like, all right, we're going to fix it. And they don't fix it.
Hey, so ineligible man downfield. What do you guys think of, you know, you get a little leeway on RPOs, right?
You don't get 6 yards.
You don't say. How about 8 yards? I felt like it was like 8 yards for the Penn State guy.
What are you talking about? 6 to 8 yards.
The play where Brad Hawkins almost intercepts the pass. Did you see who ran into him to kind of disrupt the attempt at the interception?
No. I don't know what play you're talking about.
It's the second quarter. It's like
he drops the interception.
He's going for it. He hits him both hands and drops it. He almost gets there, but he got disrupted before he could get over there because he got hit by a guy. You know who he got hit by? A freaking lineman.
Wasn't
like 7 yards down the field.
Wasn't this batted? I don't remember this play at all.
It was batted, yeah.
The pass that Caesar was called ineligible man downfield for, that was tipped.
Well, yeah, it was tipped
no, but that was
field.
Knocked out of DPJ's hands, right?
It was still
a carom, though.
I don't know if they call it a legal man downfield if it gets batted at the line of scrimmage. I honestly don't know.
I don't know either. But
I do.
I mean,
I get what you're saying.
That seems like the wrong calls to focus on.
That was one of them. And that's just one. Oh, you want more? I mean, we can talk about more.
We all know this. Like, I don't know what dwelling on it is going to help.
So what it does is raises the what I think should be a talking point when it comes to accountability for officials. It's not enough anymore to highlight the mistakes. It's also, I think, necessary to be really hammering home solutions. Because unless we start throwing out really legitimate, easy to implement options, then we're going to continue to have a status quo. And for me, my deal is I think they should have a grading system for officials that is public. I think there should be public accountability for officials so we can measure their performance just like we do coaches and players, where you can see everything from them in the way of one loss record, what they do at night, how they are at home versus on the road, you know, what they do in certain conditions. Yeah. We have all of these metrics on players and coaches, but nothing on officials. So you're left to look to people like Craig Ross to let you know, hey, is this officiating crew good? Is that officiating? Everyone should have that information, because I think that that is a way to help, you know, sort of establish accountability on the level that we need to have it.
CFB Ref Stats does a little bit of that. Not quite.
CFB Ref Stats.
It's some bettors that are tracking refs to try to get an edge.
Why are bettors ahead of this curve?
Because bettors are always ahead of the curve. They need to be, or they can't bet anymore.
Shouldn't we?
That's a self-answering question.
All right. Shouldn't us folks that are just concerned about the integrity of the game be, you know, be on that too?
I mean, isn't there
a
rating system given the number of complaints on Twitter? And
yeah.
So.
Are we just stuck with status quo, Brian?
Yes.
It's just always going to be.
Yes,
like that.
It's always going to be like this.
I mean, there's always going to be you're always going to get screwed more on average on the road. That's what we saw.
I think it's. I think we are always going to have what we accept.
Okay.
And if it was enough of an issue for us, if it was enough of an issue for coaches, where you can, when you say damn the fine, if you're in the NFL, you say damn the fine as opposed to. You know, we can't leave it to the officials. I mean, that's playing into the status quo. I think that's part of the problem that you have. Granted, you can't both things be true. Can't you make so many mistakes that, you know, you unduly influenced your opportunity to win this game and the officials screwed you in the game? Can't both things be true?
Yeah, both things are true, but.
But the officials keep coming back. Yeah. John O'Neill has a job.
Yes, he does. And that's my point. I mean, we know about John O'Neill. MGO blog readers know about
Penn
John O'Neill.
Penn State knows about
John.
Him, too. They got. I mean, it didn't affect the outcome of the game against Iowa.
That was the replay booth.
Isn't that him looking at the replay booth saying?
I still feel like it's your most committed fans, your most invested fans, not the cursory glance folks. And I'm saying those folks should know, this is a B-plus officiating crew versus this is a C officiating crew. They should know that going into the game.
But
and that reputation should follow those guys wherever they go. And then at that point now, are we trying to hold up some embarrassment as a motivating factor? Yes. Yes, we are. Yes, I am.
But what extremes are you willing to take it to? Because I feel like unless you stop going to the games and stop watching on TV – the conference isn't going to do anything about it until you hit them in the bottom line. So, I mean, that's probably not happening. As much influence as you have, Sam Webb.
I'm not saying me. It's not a quest of mine that is going to get. I think it has to be a collective thing. You know, how much are fans willing to take?
Yeah.
How much are coaches? How much are coaches willing to take? You know, you see here more coaches speak out about it and say, "Damn the fine." Maybe that'll be the issue. Still looking for the answer of what to do to get it to change, but tired of just getting stuck.
Okay. I mean,
Lions and Michigan. Like, damn, man, can I get a freaking referee break?
Hey, I don't.
At some point, I know you're not a Lions fan, so you don't get the pain.
Like, what you're talking about.
You
man.
Don't even get the pain.
Is that a rollerball reference?
But so Notre Dame. What do you guys think of Notre Dame?
I don't know anything about Notre Dame.
Yes, you do.
No.
Yes, you do.
No, you guys.
You haven't paid.
I thought we were going to talk about this game. I paid zero attention to Notre Dame.
Not even the Georgia game.
What? That was like after we lost to Wisconsin. I didn't watch any football after that game.
Well, in that contest, I was really impressed, as I've been saying all week. I was impressed by a defensive front that I thought was going to get massacred in that game because of, you know, Georgia's offensive line is beastly.
And scored 10 points against South Carolina.
I know that, and I wonder if they just overlooked them.
I mean, the yardage and the yards per play were much more than suggest that you would score 10 points, right? Like, they had a bunch of turnovers. And,
sure.
I guess my point in talking about against Notre Dame, a team that I thought they were going to be able to roll over like a steamroller, I mean, it was Georgia was decent. They had 150 yards rushing, but nothing like what I thought they were going to do in that game. And then they came back the next week, so they got to play Virginia after that, right? And Virginia's balling. Virginia's winning at halftime. They come out after the break, and, man, they have 5 sacks in the third quarter. Yeah. I mean, they flipped the switch defensively that I didn't know they had, you know, watching them in the first game of the season against Louisville.
Well, I mean, those ends are really good, right? I mean, those are the same guys that shut down a lot of the things Michigan wanted to do in the opener last year. They're still there. I mean, I think that's what you expect. I mean, this is a pretty good this is a top 10 very athletic team. So, you know, Michigan's going to have to come out and play their best game and hopefully make less mistakes than last week. You know, I mean, I thought they could hang with Georgia. I wasn't surprised that they were in that game. I didn't expect them to win, and that's kind of how it turned out. But
I thought it'd be a double-digit victory for Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people did. But, you know, Ian Book's a good quarterback. I mean, he's not, you know, a Heisman hopeful or anything, but he's a guy that should scare the defense and ability to continue to move the sticks. And, yeah, I mean, they're a solid team.
Yeah, I don't think they give – I mean, they are hard on Ian Book down there in South Bend. I think, you know, compared to Everett Golson, for instance, compared to what they have, I mean, Ian Book has been a revelation. Yeah. He gave you a shot. At Georgia, he is not a world beater to your point as a quarterback, but he's a playmaker. He can scramble around a little bit.
I mean, do these guys want Brandon Wimbush back? Like, that guy's not even playing for Central Florida.
Right. Everett Golson, Brandon Wimbush. I mean, you think about some of the quarterbacks they've had here recently, and then look at Ian Book, a guy who, you know, has been without his tight end a portion of the season. They've been trying to find a running game, and maybe they finally have. So that's been an issue as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I just think considering what he's had and then the turnover they've had on the offensive line, you know, due to graduation. I mean, you know, I think the guy is a pretty darn good quarterback, personally.
I completely agree.
So, you know, we'll see. To your point, I also agree with you. It's a matter of mistake management.
Hmm.
You know, can Michigan be... Can they be as clean as they were for 2.5 quarters against Penn State? Now, this is a relative assessment because as clean as they were doesn't mean that they were, you know, that they were totally clean. There were still some pretty bad plays in there, but it's about limiting the mistakes to that degree. If they can do that, I think they can beat Notre Dame. I think they will beat Notre Dame if they do that.
Sure, yeah, sure, if they do that. I mean.
Right. You're absolutely right. It does 2.5 quarters does not a pattern make. So can they put back-to-back games together like that?
Don't back-to-back know the answer. Games?
Okay.
The one game.
Can they bring a full game on the heels of the 2.5 quarters we just saw? So how about that?
I mean, I think Patterson's decision-making was better against Illinois. I think that was kind of obscured by the fact that, like, a lot of balls got lost in the wind and he wasn't as accurate as we normally expect of him. So, yeah, I mean, I think they can build on the two games.
I was encouraged by Shea in that game at Penn State.
He was back to what he was last year, but that's not what I was hoping for. You know, it's an improvement, but it's an improvement on a really, really disappointing season. So, like, is that going to
I mean, no one's going to argue with that. He hasn't lived up to expectations.
What I'm saying is that, like, even in this game that everybody's like, ooh, like, I think if Shea Patterson had been playing better this year, people would be like, there's a lot of errors in that game. And, mm-hmm. you know, his yards per attempt kind of.
Oh, well, okay, so I get what you're saying. You're comparing where he is now to what you expected him to be. I'm comparing him and the offense to where they have been in season, not what my expectations were.
Yeah, it was better. Was it good enough? No. They scored 21 points and lost. Like,
So would you say there were definitely 28 points on that board, right?
Sure.
There were definitely 28 points on that board that if you base it just on Shea's part, they scored 28 points in that game. And they they're at least going to overtime.
I mean, it's you get a touchdown because Bell has a 35-yard screen where he dodges a tackle. I feel like people are always like blaming the receivers for not making plays when they're making up for whatever mistakes they have.
I mean, if you listen to us, we talk about Shea's flaws. We talk about his, you know, the mistakes that he's made in the zone read game.
I mean, honestly, it doesn't matter.
We talk about all that.
Like, they're going to get hammered by Ohio State. They're going to get hammered.
But they aren't playing Ohio State this week.
We're not there yet.
Talk about Notre Dame.
They got four games.
This is a one-game season, and they're going to get hammered in that game.
So how about this, Brian?
See you next month.
Yeah, are you going to watch the Notre Dame game?
I might put it on mute in the background, see what happens.
Like, what are you going to do the next few weeks, man?
I have no idea. But, like, stop trying to, like, cheer me up and make me, like, optimistic about stuff.
I'm not trying to make you optimistic.
But, like, you're like, oh, well, Shea's, like, going to do this and it's going to happen. It's like, it's not. It's not going to happen.
I guess I would go into this game with less hope if I hadn't seen any sign of improvement in the last game. But I did. So because of that, I go into the next game thinking, okay, they got a better shot to win this game before the shot they would have prior to the Penn State game.
And I feel like everyone agrees with you, Sam. Like, you know, Michigan started out as a 2.5-point favorite. Now they're 1 point. I thought that was a little bit too many points. Now they're actually 1 point underdog, which I think is too far the other way. You know, my numbers have them by a point. It should be a close game. And, I don't know. I mean, I think you got to be hopeful. I agree with you, Sam.
Let's go to Eddie and Callie. Eddie, what's up?
Hey, what's happening, Roundtable? Greetings from the Golden State. How you guys doing?
I'm great.
just want to say a few things about this team. Very frustrating team to watch. Very disappointing, even borderline depressing. It's almost like Groundhog Day with these guys because it's just the same old thing. And I know the coaches never coach their players to fumble the ball, to throw interceptions, to drop passes. It just keeps happening, though. And at some point, you have to find ways to win, don't you, instead of finding ways to lose? I know that the Zebras, man, you know what? The Zebras are the Zebras. You know, you can't depend on them, but yeah, they got screwed, this and that. After the game, though, I really found myself asking this question, and I'm wondering what you guys think, because I'm not off the Harbaugh wagon. I'm not off the Michigan wagon. I'm there, man. But I'm on the ledge. And the reason is because you still see the same old problems. They're incredibly close. They just can't get over that hump. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the stats of this game, you're going to be shaking your head and say, how the hell did you guys lose? Especially in the second half, when they flat out whoop those boys, okay? They have the talent to play with the big boys, but they just can't do it again, again, and again. So here's what I'm losing faith in, guys. I'm losing faith in this defensive scheme because I know it's high risk, high reward, but you know what else it is? It's high risk, high punishment. And how much of this loss, seriously, straight up, how much of this is on Harbaugh? Thanks, guys. Go Blue.
I don't know. I mean, it's like it does feel like there are a lot of errors across various parts of the team. So if it was just the wide receivers, you could be like, oh, it's the wide receivers coach. If it was just the offensive line, you could be like, oh, it's the offensive line coach. If it was just the decisions, you could be like, oh, it's the guy who makes the decisions. But since it's just seems like everybody is breaking down on a semi-regular basis, it kind of goes back to the head guy. And it's not like Harbaugh's a bad coach.
I mean, I think he said it's on him.
Yeah, but you go to – I mean, that's just press conference talk. Like, you know, like if you show up, you're like – people – coaches always say, oh, it's on me. And – but what I'm saying is like this program, we're 5 years in here. We have these kind of issues that seem pretty consistent. And it probably goes back to just the way the program is, you know. A lot of coaching turnover, a lot of, you know, kind of recruiting hiccups here and there, a lot of disorganization at times, and then they kind of like get religion and like, all right, we're going to turn the corner here, and it doesn't seem like they do. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like we were hoping that Jim Harbaugh would come in and be a top five coach, and it doesn't seem like he is. Like, he's probably
in that next tier,
but that next tier is where we're at, where it's like, okay, you go 9-3, you go 10-2, you don't win the division.
I mean, I think there's a lot of good coaches in that next tier that are trying to catch Alabama and Clemson. I mean, you look at James Franklin. He's a guy that strives to be a top five coach, and he also hasn't gotten there, right? I mean, last year they get that close loss against Ohio State, get blown out at Michigan, and then lose a bowl game. You know, it's not an excuse, but like I'm saying, it's hard to get over that hump and to get where Alabama and Clemson are.
I think I look at the remainder of this season to see how this team, I think you got to be careful not to make the assessment on the season before the season is over. If they tumble down the stretch, then that certainly will be another check mark against the program course, if you will, as the aspiration is to be a championship caliber team. And while the national championship deal is off the table now, obviously, the Big Ten championship is probably out of reach. Can you be better? Can you be better than you were last year? And better than you were last year, I mean, beating your rivals, all of your rivals, having a better season than you had last year. I know, Brian, you already said they're going to get killed by Ohio State. If they get killed by Ohio State, then that would indeed be considered. I mean, you didn't have the type of season that you needed to have in year five to be looking like you are getting closer to that championship level. So, but again, we got the Notre Dame game here right now. Let's see what they do in that contest.
Hell with Notre Dame.
At least I'm not talking for you. Not talking for you, Brian. How about Ed, you and I? We see what they do against Notre Dame.
I'm excited.
I'm
going to
watch
about,
the game, but like if you come out of this Penn State game thinking like, ooh, this changes things, I can't get there.
I can't make any guarantees. I'm just saying I feel more encouraged about their chances of winning this game than I did prior to Penn State. So, you know, we'll see if it works out that way. Let's go to the phones real quick. Talk to Jake in Ann Arbor. Jake, what's up?
I just want to say, I know, I wanted to wish Ira a happy birthday and stuff. I hope you have a really good birthday and stuff, Ira. And I just wanted to say, what a great time to be a Michigan Wolverine on the recruiting front, to the football, to the basketball and stuff. And I really think, I gotta admit, I was wrong on my prediction this year for the football, but I'm really still behind the team, win or lose. Go Blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue, and I think we'll get we'll beat Notre Dame 21-17. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue.
Thanks a lot, Jake, and happy birthday to you too, buddy.
Yeah, happy birthday, Jake. He mentioned recruiting. So real quick, Isaiah Todd, what do you guys think of that pickup? The significance of that pickup?
Well, for Howard to get in on a guy who didn't really have any connections with, and be able to connect with his mom, and you know, get that recruitment going from pretty much a standstill is very impressive. So the kind of the theory about how Michigan is as good as they were under Beilein is they recruit better, and that's step one.
Yeah, absolutely. Winning basketball is about talent, first and foremost. And I say that as an analytics guy. So get the best players. Yeah.
And hopefully it brings in a couple more guys in this class. And if you look at it so then one-and-done model is pretty tough to replicate because there's just not enough of those guys to go around when Kentucky and Duke are scooping up all of them every year. But the 2020 class looks like it'll have Todd, and then it'll have a number of guys who are probably going to be around for 2, 3, 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good combination. So like having kind of your base program that you is a pretty good program, and then sprinkling in one or two of these guys a year to, you know, contend for the national championship is a good model.
Gotcha.
All right, folks, MGO blog, thepowerrank.com. Be sure to check the fellas out. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we're talking about a victory. Yep. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
It won't cheer Brian up, but
it'll,
hopefully.
It'll do a little bit, yeah.
Oh, it will?
Yeah, it'll do a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, I'm color me surprised.
It'll be okay.
What if we smash him?
Well,
Shea throws for 400 yards.
I'll just settle for a victory.
Yeah.
I'll just settle for a victory, man. We got to get out of here. Coming up next, Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Who's got it better than us?
No!